This is the Saxo Market Call, daily insights on what is moving the financial markets.
Hello and welcome to the Saxo Market Call. It is Thursday, 29th of July, 2021. Interesting FOMC meeting last night. In some ways, not so interesting in others. Certainly not an unambivalent hawkish sign as we were somewhat expecting with a more profound taper message. But there are some potentially some takeaways there that we can get into, even though the market is trying to find a sort of a positive spin on it. And we can see that actually in the performance of some equity indices. I'm going to actually skip to that right away, and I'll get back to you. I'll tell you who you're on the call on fixed income. Slide three. So we still have this sort of divergent momentum in place in the NASDAQ. We did have a decent session yesterday, clawing back towards 15,000 before I think it was especially the Facebook plunge in late hours, after hours trading post their earnings report that took sentiment back a notch. But you can see, of course, on the Saxo equity theme basket performances that it's the more speculative stuff that had a very strong day on the day. Yesterday, bubble stocks was right up there, just under cannabis, crypto and blockchain, next-gen medicine, etc. As well, you can see the MSCI emerging markets, one we've been talking about so much on the negative side, still minus 7.4% month to date, but a positive bounce in China as officials stepped in there to sort of reassure the market. The regulator looking to reassure that the crackdown on online education companies is a one-off aimed at that industry only. And the PBOC out with some liquidity operations to enhance liquidity into month end. And so we're going to talk about how, you know, how fair the market reaction is to the FOMC. And it's great to have you on the call, Altea, on fixed income. Before we get to that, though, it's important to highlight that you are hosting a webinar later on fixed income at 11 o'clock GMT, 1300 CET. But besides what we're going to talk about here with U.S. yields, obviously, and the FOMC, what's your focus going to be in today's webinar?
Well, John, I think that today I will be talking also about how bond investors can behave amid stagflation. This is a concern that continuously rises, so I will be looking at ways to hedge against it. And then I will be looking also at European sovereigns following the symmetric 2% inflation target that the ECB established at the beginning of the month. And what does that mean for European sovereigns going forward?
All right, so you can sign up for that. As you can see on slide two, just go to webinars.saxo, type it into your browser, and sign up there for Altea's webinar. So let's get into the FOMC here, and your nice set of charts here, Altea, reminds me I need to step up my charting game on the slides. First of all, let's see. Okay, so we got a pretty minor upgrade in the statement. Some, of course, an upgrade in the commentary on the economy. Several times we were seeing this insertion of the word progress. So the FOMC is noting that there is some progress in the economy, but the word substantial was not used to describe the scale of the progress. We did see a brief knee-jerk reaction on the back of that with rates coming in back higher. But by the end of Powell's press conference, we were pretty much back to where we started, and certainly overnight, we were pretty much back to where we started the day in terms of rate expectations. I think pulling out where the market may be getting things a little bit complacent on this meeting was it was very clear from on a couple of questions where Powell refused to make a statement on inflation, wanting to defer to the committee on sort of whether the inflation was seen as reaching the target zone for the Fed, et cetera. That indicates there's obviously very significant division on the FOMC board on what to communicate vis-a-vis inflation. Of course, on the employment side, that's where Powell is focusing on the need for further so-called substantial progress. But he did position the market as, or his expectations for the labor market as seeing a very strong surge and bounce back in coming months. So theoretically, we could still have the September meeting as being live, but I think the bar would be high for some very strong prints on both certainly payrolls, but also on the wages side for the July and August data cycles, which we will get the July one, of course, already next week. with the non-farm payrolls change, unemployment survey, et cetera. And then we'll have one for August and early September. But I'll tell you, the market really not having much of it. And your focus, what is your focus in terms of not only what Powell said, but sort of what the market is saying here across the different bits and pieces in U.S. Treasuries?
Yeah, John, well, the surprising thing is that yesterday the statement of the FOMC was slightly hawkish, but there was really a very minor reaction from nominal rates. What was most striking was the reaction of real yields following the press conference. And that's why I put 10 years TIPS yields chart on slide four. And as you can see, yesterday, actually, we reached a new record at 1.17% minus 1.17% in yields. Basically, the yield fell around 1.7 basis points after the FOMC press conference. But what does that mean? It can mean only two things. Either the market is really scared about inflation and it believes that inflation is not as transitory as the Federal Reserve wants us to believe, or otherwise it believes that the recovery is going to be faster and stronger than expected, then nominal yields would need to adjust as a consequence.
And then you've also got some perspective on this, what he said on employment. And you've got this on slide five. So you have this indicator, of course, the U.S. unemployment rate. We all understand that in blue. But what is this orange U.S. labor market differential? And what's your point here?
Well, that U.S. Labor market differential is basically the difference between the percentage of jobs plentiful. So it's basically coming out of a survey, and it shows the difference between how people perceive accessible is the job market. So it's jobs plentiful minus jobs hard to get. And in this case, we see a spike, and which is even above what we have seen in the 90s. So what does that index is indicating? Is that there is plenty of jobs, and the unemployment rate should subside, because the two are invertibly correlated. So basically, the point that I want to draw here is that we might not be at maximum employment as the Federal Reserve wants us to be. However, we are very close to be there. And while we get towards this target, we have other elements that are pushing the Federal Reserve to be more hawkish, which are low yields, because they add to monetary stimulus. And also there is an unprecedented amount of liquidity. There is too much cash chasing too few assets. So basically, all these elements should push forward the Federal Reserve to be more hawkish in the next meeting. In slide five, in red on the right, I also put why the Federal Reserve might decide to stay dovish for longer, which is a taper tantrum fears, and also fear of another COVID variant that might slow down growth. However, I still believe that risk is quite minor at this point in time.
Yeah, and I think he was pretty clear in the press conference that he, they were very aware of the Delta COVID variant, but they just don't see these virus resurgences as being a particularly large risk for the economy. Of course, he's always caveats that could change, et cetera, but they seem to believe that new outbreaks aren't necessarily going to immediately impact the economy, but they could delay some bits as we go into beginning of the new school year, et cetera, in terms of activity. So what's your, what's your outlook? And we talked so much as well in recent podcasts, and you can listen in on the one yesterday with this wind down of the Treasury's general account. It's essentially allowing the Treasury, or it means that the Fed is effectively buying as much or more of issuance in treasuries than the treasury is actually issuing. And that's going to change, of course, sometime soon as they reach their target in terms of drawing down that general account. And we'll see that issuance picking up. So what factors besides that are you looking for? And what's your outlook for maybe in terms of levels for U.S. longer yields?
Well, I wanted to take you on slide six because that's how that's where I'm trying to visualize this concept. And on the bottom left, you find a chart with the yield curve in yellow where it was before the June FOMC meeting and in green where it is now. So what we have seen is that the U.S. Yield curve has flatten out, and the long part of the yield curve is basically the part that experienced the biggest rally or fall in yields. So what can we expect now? Where there are two elements, if we look at that way, one that compress yields, especially on the front part of the yield curve, and that is excess liquidity. And also, as you mentioned, the Treasury General Account drawdowns, which is going to put in the system more liquidity, compressing yields further. And on the long run, well, on the long part of the yield curve, we have this inflation risk. There is the risk that inflation is not transitory. So it means that the Federal Reserve would need to tighten and be more aggressive. That should push up yields. But where we are now is that in the near term, it's very likely that there is more pressure on yields because of the drawdown on the Treasury General Account. And also we have to highlight the fact that now we are in the summer months, so there is very low liquidity in the market. So it's very unlikely to see a fast rise of yields, especially if there is not been a particularly hawkish statement that scared the market from the FOMC meeting. So in the short term, expect yields to be stable all over. But in the long term, well, that rally that we have seen in U.S. treasuries since the beginning of the month can quickly revert because if the Federal Reserve start to be more hawkish and tighten the economy, well, that 10 years falling from 1.70 to 1.20% might quickly revert, and we could see yields rising again above 1.5%.
Yeah, I think at 1.5% level will be interesting, especially vis-a-vis growth and especially growth stocks, but those very highly valued stocks, particularly the sensitivity we've talked about before in the NASDAQ 100 equities, if we're starting to see yields pick back up. But that could be some way off, as you indicate. And I'm really curious about this reverse repo facility as we head into the August timeframe. On slide seven, you've got the latest chart with that data as we've crept back well above $900 billion on the reverse repo facility, basically showing that the Fed is having to lend back out these treasuries that it's buying. It just points to the dysfunction of QE and that there's too much liquidity in the system. What's your take on another indicator or another development you saw yesterday from the Fed?
Yeah, John, I think it was quite interesting to see the Federal Reserve establishing a standing repo facility, which is basically the mirror image of the reverse repo facility. So basically what the Federal Reserve is trying to create here is a rate corridor for money markets, establishing a flat rate of 0.05%, which is the reverse repo facility, and a ceiling rate of 0.25%, which is the one of the standing repo facility. Of course, right now, the problem is like we mentioned before, for liquidity to compress yields. So this is why we see the usage of the reverse repo facility soaring However, the Federal Reserve putting and establishing a standing repo facility, which is not going to be used at the moment, just shows that the Federal Reserve is moving towards, is preparing to taper and tighten the economy, which means that at a certain point, we'll see also this short part of the curve, yield curve rising in yields.
All right. And in addition, on the back of this FOMC meeting, given that the takeaway was fairly benign in terms of risk, fairly benign in terms of any fears that the Fed is leaning hard on doing something very soon, we saw the dollar weakening. It's not been a tremendous move by any means, but it's weakening away from some key levels we've talked about. And Eurodollar, that sub 118, that whole sequence of attempting lower there has so far failed. We've backed up decently above 118.50 the last time I had a check this morning. You can see the overview there on slide 8. And there's just so much resistance to work through for Eurodollar. And at the same time, you've got a very dovish ECB. So, you know, we have to start. You're not really starting on a comeback until you're above 120. So could be a tough slog there. In the meantime, as indicated on the U.S. Labor market, maybe even some other macro data points I'll be talking about in a moment could provide a bit more two-way potential on the U.S. dollar. And then on the trends, you're seeing the dollar essentially fading back to flat. In our medium-term trending measures, having lost so much momentum in the last week or so. Sterling trying to pick up the Swiss franc, even a bit surprisingly perhaps, but somewhat linked to those low yields and the dovish ECB, no doubt as well. But really, we're waiting for some impulses, I think, potentially from the commodities market, which is nervous probably around China and otherwise, although we are seeing some key commodities picking up, and I'll have one of those in a second. But just want to briefly touch on earnings. Again, the Facebook report yesterday, headwinds on regulatory risks, and especially the Apple move to limit some of the data collection that Facebook does on its mobile devices. They're seeing that as providing headwinds in the future, even though they reported pretty strong results with beat estimates for Q2. That had Facebook shares down some 5% after hours. So watching that situation. Today, we had already Volkswagen out with its pretty positive spin on that earnings report as they're looking to up their estimates for the rest of the year because of sales of high-end vehicles and avoiding as much as they can the impact of this chip shortage, which they actually expect to get worse for the rest of the year, or certainly in Q3. And then Amazon will be out reporting after the close today. A lot of focus there on the scale of growth of Amazon Web Services. Expected around 30%. So, and then of course the guidance will be really critical there. It is the first earnings call with Jeff Bezos not at the helm. Can't remember the name of the fellow that has replaced him, but look for that as well. And MasterCard also reporting today. And you can see the other ones on slide 9. One commodity I just want to bring in just because I noticed the headline and the weather concerns around it. So we saw this big impulse higher, and a lot of the grains kind of eased back. But now some of the one of the key grains, wheat, is actually on the rise again, and particularly the northern wheat varieties in the U.S. You can see why on slide 10. I'm showing you the drought monitor, both in the U.S., which is only about a week old, that monitor. And you see the northern regions there, the Dakotas, with a pretty extreme drought situation. And the chart above is from a Canadian weather service or official source. Showing, and that was as of the end of June. Updates monthly, I believe, showing similarly key grain growing areas experiencing drought. And on the left is the Bloomberg chart of Minnesota wheat is in the candlestick, getting to close to 10-year highs almost if it gets towards $10 a bushel, whereas the Chicago wheat is still a little bit lower, but working into a pretty high zone relative to where it has traded the last 8+ years as well. So we need to keep an eye on these types of things as input costs, especially for those economies where the food portion of the CPI basket is quite high. All right, let's round out today with the next keys, which in terms of macro event risks. And you see the calendar highlights on slide 11. There's a pretty busy calendar for today, and especially want to pull out the U.S. Data points. Besides the weekly claims, we have the first Q2 GDP estimate, which will include the latest price index, which will be out at an expected or is expected to be out at a 5.4% annualized rate. That would be the highest level I'm forgetting since when. I had on the recent podcast, I believe it was since the early 80s, basically, an incredible print. And then as well, following that, we have tomorrow, the June PCE inflation indicator. Also expected to show, and this is a bit delayed relative to the official CPI, so unless it's particularly high, I think if it comes in as expected, it won't be a huge market mover. But do consider that the core is expected at 0.6%, even higher, and that's month on month, even higher than the 0.5% from May, and the core rising expected to rise to a new high, cycle high of 3.7% year on year. And also really key to note, besides what we have up today, is that tomorrow we have the U.S. Fed's Bullard out speaking. He's of the St. Louis Fed. He is not a voter this year, but he's been a pretty prominent voice in terms of saying that the Fed should be tapering already here and now, and could represent and be seen as representing, and maybe even could hint at that, that he represents voices on the Fed that are concerned about this pickup in inflation. So certainly watch for that ahead of the weekend. So, we didn't get much from the FOMC, but there are some potential bits and pieces the market may have misread in terms of how quickly we could the view could change on how the Fed will move next. So that's what we'll be watching for, those reactions sifting through the market action today and ahead of the weekend. For now, that's a wrap. We'll be back tomorrow with the Saxo Market Call.
Thanks for listening. This has been the Saxo Market Call. For feedback and questions, reach out to us on Twitter at SaxoMarketCall or by email, marketcall@saxobank.com.